The following program contains the opinions of the host, guests, and call-in participants. These do not necessarily represent the views of this show's distributors or sponsors. This program may contain obscene, profane, or otherwise objectionable language. Viewer discretion is advised. If only it was as handsome as that picture. It's like one of the best pictures ever taken for me. I'm going to mention the photographer's name is Steve Foley. He probably doesn't want to be associated with the show, but man, he's a fantastic photographer. It's 11:02 on the East Coast of the United States, 8:02 on the West Coast, 10:02 where I'm sitting here in Minneapolis. I'm Jim Peters. Welcome to Jim Peters at Night. And to the three people, watching in Australia, good day, mate, or something like that. I don't know. I mean, I was just thinking if I had a producer, I would act the producer right now off camera. You know, could you Google how far ahead Australia is in time from Minneapolis? I think it's 15 hours, but I can't do math that quick. What does that mean? It's like, was it 8 a.m. there or something like that? I don't know. How you doing? Yes. Hello. Okay. So here's the deal. Tonight, our guests are the King Brothers. We taped this interview just a few minutes ago. I tape interviews in the afternoon, but we did this just before we went live here. And I think I've told you the reason we tape interviews, we basically try to make it really, really easy for guests to come on the show. And the people, especially on the East Coast, they don't want to come on at 11:30 at night. I don't blame them. You know, it's past their bedtimes. Most of these people have real lives, so they're not like me where I'm up 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, watching Gutfeld or on tape or something, doing it or whatever I'm doing. So the King Brothers are in Palo Alto, California. They've done doing this talk show out of their garage in their parents' house at Palo Alto since 2015, and it's actually caught on. The local newspapers in the Bay Area have written about it. They draw real audiences. They're drawing well over 50, 70 people a show. No shit. It's really amazing. It's amazing. And they're very entertaining guys. And anyway, they're our guests tonight. Tomorrow, I'm kind of excited about this. Martha Zoller is joining us. She is Atlanta talk show host. She was named Talker Magazine's A Woman of the Year. Oh, Jesus. What the hell? God, I got my phone ringing. It's terrible. She was named Talker Magazine's Woman of the Year for 2023. Talker Magazine's is the industry Bible of the talk radio and media business in the United States, both talk radio and talk TV. So, and as if you've listened to the show before, oh, by the way, this is our 37th installment of Jim Peters at Night. It's our 10th week. Before we started, in July, 2 weeks before we started, Talkers Magazine ran a story about this show. Because apparently, and was not aware of this, but it appears we are the first talk show in American history to take video phone calls. And speaking of that, you can call me up on this show too. If you go right here, see that? jim@night.com/call. Now, you think, well, why do I have to go to a webpage URL to call? Because it's video, dumbass. you don't need a telephone number. On that page at the top, there's a giant, giant blue button. You click that button, you get to check your camera and mic, and you're in the queue. It's simple. I've asked every single person who called up how hard it is. You know, David from San Francisco, he said, well, it was harder finding your website than actually calling in. It is. It's super easy. And also, I do want to point this out because I'm starting to realize that all you people are trollers and you don't want your face on camera. You can choose no video and just go on with your mic. If you do that, I'd appreciate it if you uploaded a pic or an avatar to represent you that goes on the screen. But yeah, you can call up here and you don't have to be on the screen. You can do that. Also, you'll notice down below at the bottom of the screen here, see that? We take texts and voicemails at the number. The number is 408-458-5088. It's the best freaking number you ever get by accident in your entire life. And believe it or not, that's the area code of Silicon Valley. No shit. We were randomly assigned a phone number by TextFree, and there you go. That's what it is. So you can send us a text, or you can leave a 30-second voicemail at that number. Now, people started to leave voicemails. So we got one last night. Now, I'm trying to figure out, this is so goofy. I'm trying to figure out how to get it on the show, and you think, well, how hard is that? It's audio. But here's the problem. The entire internet, when we started this show, and this is in the Talkers Magazine story, too, this was originally supposed to be a live audio podcast. That was the idea. Problem, it's almost impossible to go live with audio only. Everything on the internet is geared toward video now. So then I thought, okay, we'll do a podcast, we'll have a video feed. But as this went on and I started to realize how we were going to produce this, well, it's no harder taking video phone calls than audio phone calls. It's actually, in some ways, it's easier. Because like I said, the whole thing is oriented toward video. So now I got to figure out, I can easily grab these sound files from our voicemail. That's not a problem. The problem is, how do I actually get them on the screen? I think I have this figured out, but we got a very nice audio mixing board here, and I think I'm just going to put the sound files in there and push the buttons, I think, but I don't know. It's like, you know, if you want, you know, there's a guy named Cooper who calls us up. You know, he uses a cell phone. You can call up with your cell phone. If you go to that URL on your iPhone, the only caveat here for calling into voicemail, you have to use a Google Chrome web browser, unless you're on an iPhone or an iPad. Then you use the Safari browser built in to your device. But other than that, you use a Google Chrome web browser. If you're on an iPhone, and I asked him, he said he is, you just go to that web page and push the button. It's simple. So the way this program works, if you've never seen it before, I blabble on endlessly for about roughly 20 minutes to 30 minutes, little monologue. We have our guest on. That's usually about 30 to 40 minutes. Then afterwards, I usually come up with science or paranormal or UFO news or stuff like that. We got some interesting comments. People actually were complimentary about my little after monologue last night about the UFO thing, which is actually kind of cool. I appreciate that. My thing is, the gist of that was, I went to the UP, Michigan UP, to visit some friends at a little dinner party, and somebody who's actually seen the show asked, do you actually believe all the UFO stuff? And I said, you know, here's the deal. If we had that technology, we'd be doing the exact same freaking thing. We already are. We go to Africa, there's all those quote-unquote non-contacted tribes. Yeah, and we sit in the bushes, anthropologists, and watch them. Yeah, Jesus Christ, you know, shit. Like, we haven't done that before. Anyway, that's my story. I'm sticking to it. So, so tomorrow night, Martha Zoller. Next Monday. Oh, I'm taking Thursday off again. I mean, yeah, 2 weeks in a row. I'm sorry. I got shit to do. Next Monday, Larry Newman, Bail Bondsman's coming on to talk about cashless bail. Tuesday, Eddie Scarry, a conservative commentator, been on Fox News a million times. He wrote the book Liberal Misery, and that's what I want to talk to him about, because he has the same theory I do, and that is the reason people are divided is not really politics. It has to do with personality type. You have liberal personality types and conservative personality types, and that's the reason people can't communicate. That's his thing. Jeff Meyer's coming on next Wednesday from Kong News. We we're off to the races. I don't have anybody for Thursday yet. I don't. Sorry. So what happened on the news today? I'll tell you what happened. A hospital in Gaza City got bombed, and hundreds of people died. And the real terrible thing about this, and you got to think about this. This is like one of those master of the obvious moments, and that is those people were already there because a lot of them were already hurt. and they still got killed. Now, Hamas is saying Israel bombed the hospital. Israel is saying that not only did they not bomb the hospital, but what happened was Hamas launched a rocket that was intended to go into Israel and actually fell on the hospital. Israel is actually stating now, they said that since this war started 10 or so days ago, they have tracked at least 450 missiles launched by Hamas inside Gaza that never made it past the border. In other words, they came down in Gaza, at least 450 of them. And Hamas is saying, well, how could you believe Israel? Well, I tell you how I can believe Israel. How can I believe you? You're the people using your own citizens as human shields. Why should I believe you? Give me a reason. I don't believe you. I'm astonished, first of all, but especially on college campuses with these stupid fucking kids. And I just called them stupid fucking kids because they are. Nobody seems to want everyone about, you know, there's Occam's razor theory of theories, and that goes as this, and that is usually the most obvious answer is the right one. Not always, but usually. And you look at what's going on here, and everyone's ignoring, no, I shouldn't say everybody, no, because I know that, I mentioned this last night, the polls already indicate that these people are highly in the minority. The vast majority of the American public is with Israel on this. And I think that's mostly, if nothing else, because of the way this attack went down. People described it as 9/11. I think it's more like Pearl Harbor, to be honest. I don't really know why. It just feels that way to me. I mean, Pearl Harbor, Sunday morning, everybody's walking around. They're going, they went to breakfast and shit, and all of a sudden there's bombs raining down on you. You're not expecting it. Now, the people in 9/11 weren't expecting it either, but I don't know why. It just feels more like that to me. Whatever. But the people, everyone's ignoring, not everyone, once again, not everybody. What's being ignored is the plain obviousness of this whole thing. And that is, so, okay, you drop bombs on somebody on Friday, completely out of the blue, completely unexpected. And then you point and say, oh my God, look, they're dropping bombs on us now. And the problem on campuses seems to be that, and I'll call it a problem because it really is, these are problem children, ladies and gentlemen, that Israel is now getting blamed for retaliating. And everybody, and now people are this word's going around, proportionality. You have to respond in a proportionate manner. No, you don't. You know why? Because if you do, the conflict goes on forever. That's why. And how stupid, how come you can't figure that out? Have you been so indoctrinated by Marxist professors that you can't figure that shit out? It's like if you get bombed by somebody and you bomb them back in a quote unquote proportionate manner, well, the thing's going to go on forever. It's all it's just back and forth. No, when you get bombed like that, you have to obliterate the enemy. You don't really have a choice because if you don't, you know they're going to do it again. Well, Jim, how do you know that? Because they did it once. I mean, how stupid are you? You know, what the hell? I don't believe this. And the amount of anti-Semitism that's going on in the United States now, and especially, okay, I want to point out again, it is a small minority of people relative to the population. It is. You watch the evening newscasts on the broadcast television, and you'd think, that Americans have their undies in a bundle. No, they don't. And I do want to point this out here, too. Again, I want to reiterate this, that the vast majority of people basically agree with me, according to the polls. But still, how can you not? I don't understand. I truly don't understand. So you're on campus and you're trying to say death to Israel. I was talking about anti-Semitism. And, it's another master of the obvious thing here. I have to say this. This whole thing is driven by hatred. Now, I've always said that I think that the reason historically, my personal opinion, that the hatred for Jews, and I equate this also to the hatred of gay men, not gay people generally, but specifically gay men. I think it's envy. The Jewish population and Judaism as a religion is one of the most pragmatic, practical religions ever on the planet. Maybe the single most pragmatic one. And the Jew, and because of that, the Jewish population, the Jewish civilization is extremely, it's successful because it's pragmatic. They don't do stupid shit. And historically, of course, I'm talking about billions of people here, so I'm making a total generalization. But they have a very, very functional society, not only in Israel, but even the Jewish community here in the United States. I talked to a businessman friend of mine, and he agreed with me. He said this first. He said, I've never done business with a Jewish businessman where I've gotten screwed. They always, you do it on a handshake, and they always keep their word, even at their own peril, even if they end up losing money. They will still keep their word. And that's my experience, too. You don't have to, you can trust these people implicitly. And that sort of trust lends itself to a really cohesive society. Okay, now let me extrapolate that for a second, because this has been on my mind a lot. Your family. It's astonishing how fucked up most American families are in terms of, I mean, most people are either estranged from their parents or their children or their siblings. I mean, it's astonishing how many people are. And functional families, and I'm not talking about, nothing's perfect. I'm talking about at least where people like get together and talk to each other. You know, they may not agree, but they still get together. They're still together. Excuse me. That's the cradle of civilization. I know that the majority of people who are listening to this right now do not have that, and I just think that's sad and appalling. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, I'm sure. If your father raped you when you were a child, okay, that's pretty tough to get over. I understand that. But most of the problems that people have with their families are way, way, way less than that. It's because your sister married somebody you don't like, or, whatever. I don't know. It's seriously, some of these things are so lame, it's hilarious, all I can say is if you can, buck it up. Just forgive. That's all I can say, because what you maybe don't realize that the strength of your family is more important than whatever slight you felt. Conservatives are not collectivist type people. We're not. I mean, we're anti-collectivists. I've always compared liberals to like bees, and in some ways that's their strength, and in some ways that's their weakness. The strength is they all act in mass. Look at Congress. I mean, the liberals, the Democrats in Congress are famous and really, really good at acting one giant group. Unions, same thing, The problem, the downside of that, and this is the part where I think liberals actually pride themselves for this, and they're completely wrong. The problem with it is that there's no individual thinking. And look what's going on in Congress right now with the Republicans. Look at that. Look at that. That's a freaking mess. I mean, these people, and you got a few of them, literally a handful of them, who can't get over, they're going to stop the raising of the national debt come hell or high water. And like Jeff Meyer was on the show a couple of weeks ago, and he said this, the problem is, and he's right about this, no matter when you pull the Band-Aid off, it's going to be painful. And he's right. It is. But after thinking about that, I thought, yeah, but there's something to be said for timing. And most people in life just ignore this. They ignore the sense of timing. I have gotten shit for paying attention to this, and usually I'm right. And maybe it's because I'm a musician, because all music is basically about timing. I mean, it's like I can talk about that for an hour, and I won't. But that's really true. If you know music, you know about timing. And because the thing is, sometimes you have to wait to do a certain act, wait for the right time. And a lot of people don't understand this concept. Most people don't, I don't think. So now we got eight Republicans in the House who are basically making this whole thing miserable for everybody at a time where we dearly need a speaker. And I personally think the guy they got rid of, he may not have been the best on the planet, but he wasn't bad. you know. And now they're going to the current running person for this, Jim Jordan, is easily one of the most outstanding congressmen in Congress. No doubt about it. But I even wonder if this is going to bring him down. And where am I going with this? But the thing is like, yeah. So, okay, maybe conservatives aren't good at being collectivists. We're not. We like to stand up as individuals. But still, you need a collective society of your own, and that's your family. That's what that is. And that's the way it's always been through millennia. And especially now, this is the reason that a lot of these Marxists are trying to basically bring down the family structure, because they know this. They know it's the single most important thing in life. It's the single most, nothing, I don't have to tell you about the statistics, you know. And this gets down to what's called white privilege, but this has nothing to do with your race, nothing at all. If you grow up in a two-family or a two-parent household, your chances of success in everything are vastly improved, vastly. I mean, statistics show this, you know. And if your parents can manage to stay together, even more so. Now, at this point, I don't know if that's people get. I'm sometimes amazed at the petty reasons people get divorced, but they do. So I've been married 33 years. If you don't think my wife doesn't watch the show, because my wife is a good liberal girl, and she's wondering what happened to her formerly good liberal husband. So she doesn't. So she probably, unless you tell her, she probably won't ever hear this. But she knows that there've been times I've like wanted to fucking kill her during our marriage. Say, yeah, that's happened, you know. But I didn't, and we're still together, you know. So, and I've done some stupid things. I have. Me, look at me. Do you think this guy could do stupid shit? Yes. Yeah. I'm really good for it. But that's my point here. My point is, it's like what's happening in the world is kind of a macrocosm of what may be happening in your life. And I didn't mean to start out talking about this. I didn't. This was not my goal here. But this whole thing with the anti-Semitism, and also I better finish that comment too about gay men. So the thing is, the reason I think that both Jewish people and gay men are vilified is because of envy. I think it's people are envious. People are envious of Jewish people and the functionality of the society, and men, straight men, are envious of gay men because of their easy access to sex. That's what I think, you know. Gay men, well, you're basically having a physical relationship with somebody who thinks just like you, and for most straight men, that's like a dream. And I will say this, I'm going to end with this, because this is, I'm going to get a lot of shit for saying this. I've been around a lot of women in my life, in all sorts of, you know, romantic, work, professional things. I think it's almost genetic. I don't quite understand this. I think the problem, one of the primary problems with women in general, and I mean sexist here, I know, but yeah, okay, fine, is that all women think all other women think like them. That's the problem. It's the collectivist nature. You know, the women are the social glue of our society, and they are, and that's a strength. But because of that, because of the collectivist nature of the female psyche, all women think all other women think like them. And nothing could be further from the truth. Nothing. If women actually knew, you know, you get together for your coffee clutch or your wine group or your book club or whatever the hell it is, and you start talking, and women say, yeah. They want to agree. But in reality, it's astonishing how much they disagree on stuff. And they both don't know this, and they can't come to terms with it. I think that's a big, huge problem in society right now. And actually, I shouldn't say right now, but forever. All right, I'm done. I'm done pontificating here. Now, for the third part of the show, we're gonna play the interview with the King Brothers, which we pre-taped a few minutes ago, just before we went on. For the third part of the show, if you want to call in and call me a jackass, go right ahead. So you go to jimatnight.com/call. I got some science news. And when we come after the break, that's usually, this show goes in three parts. We do a little monologue at the beginning. I do an interview, and then I usually do science or UFO or paranormal shit at the end. That's the way it works. But if you want to call in, the idea is that the third part of the show, we take your phone call. So please call in if you want. In the meantime, we're going to watch the King Brothers here. And you know how we're going to do that? I'm going to play the bumper. Here we go.
From their home in Palo Alto, California, on our left here on the screen, that's Robbie King. That's David King on the right. I'm Jim Peters. Hi, guys. How you doing?
Hello. I'm good.
Hello, Jim. Thank you for joining us. So tell me, when did you come up with the idea to do this and why?
Robbie's idea. It was actually my idea. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And when was this?
Well, I could remember it very clearly, but it was June.
Oh, I don't remember anything clearly anyway, so. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. It was June of 2015. Me and our family went to New York City exactly a month after David Letterman retired. And we walked to the Ed Sullivan Theater, and there was no marquee. Mm-hmm. You know, everything was, you know, turned off. Yeah. Everything was all just not there anymore. And I do admit, it was a little sad.
It was. Growing up with him for 17 years was
something. Something. And during that time, I was thinking to myself, well, I mean, I know Colbert's going to, you know, replace him eventually, but what could we do in the meantime? Like, what could I do? What could you do, David? What can anyone do? And I was on the swings listening to the David Letterman theme, and I was just thinking, how about, it's The Late Show with David Letterman, David King! And then we need a Paul Schaefer. And my best friend, his name is Don Schaefer.
Yeah.
So I told Don Schaefer.
Oh, hold it. Is that really his name?
Yes, it is. Don Schaefer.
I'll be damned. Okay. Schaefer. All right. Okay.
And I asked him, hey, Don, we need a Paul Schaefer. We need a Schaefer on this recreation of this Letterman show we might do.
And Don was like, yeah, right. Okay, I'll do it. Okay, cool. And then after that, he said, we're going to get paid for this. Oh, yeah, we're going to get paid. And when he came to our house, he literally saw
this marquee on our garage door. And
like, oh, my goodness.
Oh, the King Brothers were serious. They really want to do a show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then so August 25th, 2015, our first show.
We did it. And yeah, like August 25th, 2015 was show number
I got a
one.
Picture here on the show.
Oh, yeah.
This is your guys' standard setup. This is your garage.
That was summer 2019 when that photo was taken.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And that's your audience.
Yes, it is.
So, the first time you did this, did you draw anybody?
What?
The first time you did this, did you draw anyone as far as the audience?
Well, we did. Our first audience were basically friends and neighbors. That was it,
close
really. The first show we ever did on the 25th of 2015, August 25th, that was such a messy show. We didn't know what to do.
I was nervous. I was stuttering and like
we weren't wearing any like professional suits or anything. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of I guess the way to start something. But I mean, if people would
did either one of you guys have any experience with performing like schools plays or any of that sort of stuff?
I was in the high school choir at the time, and I'm still at my college choir from this day. So I've love singing, like to play a little bit of piano and guitar, and I've done that on the show in the past too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you know most people don't know this or they don't find out until they do it, and I guess you're alluding to this, and that is when most people get up to perform in front of an audience or in front of a camera, it's very disconcerting. It's a very unusual environment, you know, and I guess you guys found that out, huh?
Oh, yeah, we did. You know, I do admit, it definitely did take time as years went by to really find out what we wanted because I do admit, like, I never thought 6 years we'd be doing The Late Show. And, you know, in the summer of 21, we officially retired the...
We ended that program.
We ended that Late Show.
And we made a new one for a summertime for part-time only because, you know, summertime, we're free, something to do, you know, get people to come see the show so everyone can have such a great time and just, you know, enjoy the night. And, you know, I love hosting, I love talking, and I just like to make people laugh. And I found my major, it is theater, because I think
good for you, man.
grown up with it all my life. My major is music, so it's theater and music. So
that's, that's good. That's really cool. Because the thing is, I mean, yeah, once you get used to this, it becomes almost second nature after you do it for a while.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely.
And so, you know, I mean, it's no secret here. I'm a friend of your mother's, and her and I are about the same age. So was Letterman, did he play the same part in your life, like a guy like Johnny Carson did in mine?
Basically, because, like, as we know, Letterman was dedicated to Johnny Carson at the time.
And that's right, yeah.
So, yeah, I have to say, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you go to New York City and you see a blank marquee and you guys get kind of misty, you know?
Yeah.
I was lucky. I saw Carson twice. So, and one time, first time at Front Row Center. So, it was pretty cool. Yeah, it really was. You know what I learned? He's really short.
Wait, what?
All right. Now, enough about me. Okay. So, guys. So when you started doing this, were you actually videotaping it right away, or was it just a live show?
Oh yeah, yeah. Every single show has been videotaped. Yes, every single one.
Did you ever get to multiple cameras and like a director?
No, just one.
Yeah, it was the flip cam.
Well, at first it was the flip camera.
Yeah.
But then it became the iPad that we're using right now. And
as years went by, it went to a camera where I sit, and then a camera in the middle. Dad would edit it here and there, and all these years went by, it got better and better and better.
Yeah.
So you did use multiple cameras, but you cut it together in post.
Yeah,
huh?
That's what we did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. That's really cool. So all right, so you started in 2015, and when did the audiences actually really start to show up?
Ooh.
You guys got some local press, right? That's right, you did.
Neighbors and friends were definitely the first ones to come and see the show.
And so did you guys notice at any point when the audiences got significantly larger?
You know, that show we had, it was the 2-year anniversary of August 25th, 2017. Yes. That was one of the best shows we ever performed. Yeah. You know, we were in a great mood that day, and we were all feeling it. I have to say that was the biggest audience we had. We had like 70
people from different around places in the Bay Area, like San Jose, San Francisco, Pacifica.
Oh, yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah. I know.
There was a lot of
cool
people at the anniversary show. It's just how it needed to be.
Yeah.
The more the merrier.
And when did you start posting these things on YouTube?
I think 2018.
Because
our friend, a friend of ours suggested, why don't you just post it on YouTube, get more publicity. And I was like, okay, well, it doesn't seem to hurt. There's only a few of them on YouTube, but regardless, I mean, that's when we started, you know, posting things like for real and stuff. But the main videos and episodes that made the headlines was on your Facebook.
Yes, my Facebook.
On your page.
Yes.
Click on the video of the boom, you can see a whole, you know, episode of the show we did recently.
Or I can send you all a link to it.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
I did notice that you guys did some Zoom shows during the pandemic, right?
Yeah. It was... it was bad.
Oh my
depressing, God. Huh?
I took 6 months off. I guess I was on sabbatical leave for a while because during the Zoom time during the worst part of COVID,
I was so bored and I try to make the most of it and be positive as much as I can. But since it was so depressing,
it was hard to do shows.
It was hard for me to.
And it's hard to do it. It's also hard to do without an audience, because without an audience perspective, it's like the person performing, like, or singing a song. It's like we need that audience feedback.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Yeah.
This is a very, what I'm doing here is a very strange combination of radio and television. I've been doing this for 10 weeks now, and I have to tell you, the more I do it, the more I realize it's a completely unique medium. I have no audience, audience. The show is live, although you guys are, you know, we're pre-taping this. The show is actually live. People call in with their cameras. So it's just, and I don't even know what to make of it. I mean, I'm starting to realize that this is really a unique thing and nobody's really even come up with a name for it. But, like, once again, enough about me. The thing I want to address here is the fact that you guys basically got addicted to the audience, didn't you? Because the thing is, people do. I do, too.
Yeah.
You know,
we need the audience.
And
the most important part of the show.
And I remember fall 2020 when we knew things were, I guess, a bit safer, where we realized, you know, how COVID is. Okay, we'll have a couple of members back in the band. Don was on Zoom. My other good friend Jamal was behind, the tambourine guy and the guy who plays clarinet.
And my brother came back as the bass player.
And singer. And announcer.
And announcer. And it was nice having it, you know, hybrid.
It was hybrid. Yeah. By the end of 2020, we made them hybrid shows, like in-person and online. And then so we did a little bit of both.
Yeah, when 2021 started, right when we got vaccinated, then it was safe for all of us to come back again.
Yeah.
And start, you know.
At your height, how big of a band did you have?
There were five people. It was me, Michael, Don Schaefer, my friend Roger, and my friend Jamal.
And Robbie, are you a keyboard player?
I play a little bit piano. I played a...
What's your primary thing?
Like a song?
No, your primary instrument.
Honestly, my voice.
Ah.
I'm a tenor in choir.
You're a singer.
I'm in my local community college. I'm in the choir, and, you know, my professor says, you're a great singer, Robbie. Keep at it.
Yeah. That's cool. So during the show, you sang?
Oh, every time. I had to. It was just a great way to express myself. And
David, does that bother you?
No, because I also...
I'm joking. I'm a joker. I'm a kidder. Yeah, you know? I'm a kidder, yeah. Yeah.
And I've been playing violin for about 12 years, back when I was 13. And then around 2015, I was in my last orchestra concert. But back then, I was a second violin, and I didn't want to be a second. But unfortunately, I didn't get really what I wanted. But as time went on, I just kind of took a break. And then pandemic was about to end, I came back, all first violin, played so much melodies. And I've done it on the summer shows. And before the final show of 2 years ago, all I could say, I did such a great success playing first violin, playing all the melodies, like Firework. Yeah. Blocks and, you know, Best by Queen.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm a little confused here. You guys are not doing this show anymore.
No.
Not the late show.
The late show, no. We retired about nearly 2.5 years ago.
And what have you said? You've gone on to a new one?
The summer show. It's like the late show, but it's to give, like, people, you know, it's summertime, the weather's good,
something to do
during the summer. So, you know, even though we retired the late show that we were inspired by Letterman, we just felt like, you know, a year later, you know, let's do a little something different, but also make it still entertaining, because we still have it in us, and it's like,
can't leave it.
Let's do a little bit more, you know, but let's make it different.
So how is the summer show different from the late show?
Well,
how's the format? Hold up, just a second before you go on. I'm going into the assumption that your original Late Show was formatted more or less like Letterman's show, right?
Yes. Oh, the Late Show set was very similar to Letterman.
You designed it.
Okay, so
I designed it, most of it.
Uh huh. So what's new about the summer show? What's different about it?
This time, where I sit and host, it's not on, you know, the left side, is now on the right side.
Kind of like Colbert.
It's been reversed.
Yeah, like the band's on this side, and the, you know, your area's on this side. Mm-hmm. So it's been reversed compared to the original Late Show that we had.
Different floor.
It's a light blue floor this time. With the Late Show, it was like a regular blue floor.
Do I have a picture of this? Is this it?
Oh, yes. That one. But that was
season one.
That was last year of 2022. That year we had the floor black, but this year we had it light blue. That's it. Yeah, that was
does it take
one.
A long does it take a long time to trick out your garage to do this?
A little, but it was fun.
2 hours, but it's a fun project.
It's a fun project to do, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you guys are both going into performing arts. That's actually pretty cool.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know. All right. So, how long you did the summer show this summer? I assume.
Oh yeah, we did three shows.
And is it going to come back next year? Is that your plan right now?
Well, yeah. Until we move out.
Yeah. Or we could do one more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah. We should point out the garage is at your parents' house, right?
Yeah, it is. And what did Uncle?
Yeah.
What did our uncle say?
He said, all these years, you guys had such a great garage. You know what? You took advantage of it. So, haunted houses, you
late
know,
shows.
Times where when I was a kid, I would play in the garage all the time, just riding my bike around, and especially the haunted houses for the past 5-6 years. And now, talk shows.
Wow. We really did.
Well, I do have to say, I'm going to put this picture back up here, that
sure.
This is a pretty, I mean, it does look like a pretty good arrangement. I mean, you know, you kind of got your stage there and, you know.
And the marquee.
And of course, you're in Palo Alto, so the weather's always good, so you don't have to worry about that.
Not so much in the winter, but mostly good every year.
Yeah, yeah. God, this is pretty cool, guys. I mean, I'm glad you guys are doing this. It's like, is that the background behind you? Is that the background from the late show that you use?
Oh, this one?
That's the summer show. That's the summer show one.
And we that's the summer show.
Yeah, I actually built this with my own two hands.
And you painted it, so you built it this
way. Oh, my God. You don't want to, if you're a violinist, you don't want to do any work. You'll hurt them.
Yeah.
I know. I'm a string player.
Yeah.
I'm a double bass player. I should mention, I personally have two ties to the David Letterman show. One is I was the orchestra conductor in Paul Schaefer's hometown at Thunder Bay, Ontario. And also, in college, I shared a music stand with Will Lee of the bass
player. Will Lee, that's the role I was playing in the late show because I was on bass.
Yeah,
Will Lee.
Yeah,
so I was like, all right, Will Lee, gotta do what I can.
We were bass players, and him and I sat next to each other in an orchestra. That was kind of cool. So he went on to great things, and I didn't. I should have said.
And you met
what was that?
You met Paul Schaefer?
No, I never met Paul Schaefer, no. Oh, he was well known in his hometown, but I never did actually meet him, no.
I see. No. So, about Will Lee, you know, there's some music that I've heard from him. It's called Fooled, and there's another one that's called 1-2-3. It's about 10 years old, but when I was in high school, I liked listening and singing that song, because his voice is very, you know, it's coming.
Yeah. So, I don't know the exact amount, but he did put out two or three albums of his own, right? Yeah, I never actually heard any of them. Sorry, he was a fantastic musician even then.
Oh yeah,
so he sat ahead of me. So, you know.
Do you know any other CBS Orchestra members from the late show?
No, I didn't.
Just Willie.
I always thought I'd meet Schaefer just because I worked in his hometown, but it never did happen. Yeah. So
never did.
You know,
and I could tell.
I think they named
people.
Say again? What was that?
I could tell Paul Schaefer, he's such a nice person. Like, he's just really nice.
Yeah, he's also a really, really good musician, too. I mean, I don't know if you ever... Those, you know, when you're playing that much 6 days a week, those guys can just pound out stuff. They don't, you know, he play by ear totally. I mean, you know, even find the right key, you know, he knows that shit, you know.
Oh, he sure does.
That's what you have to work on, Robbie, you know. If you can get to the point where not only you can play by ear, but you can match the key that anybody's playing in, you know, God bless you, you know.
I'll do my best, see what happens.
So what's in the future for you guys then? So you're both going to college, right?
Yes. Yeah, we're still in it. We're still in college.
And where are you going? You know, if you don't want to say, that's fine, but where are you going? If you don't want
to
say.
Well, we're trying to get our associates. I'm trying to get my associates in music, David, and theater.
Mm-hmm.
Just any good music job in the future that will work. I guess another dream for me for music is to be in a band. Like, my dream is to be in a band, but as well perform it, like, at restaurants, events, and just kind of, you know, be thrown around the area a little bit and just, you know, make it a great career hobby, you know? Like, that's kind of a dream I have.
Robbie, did you have enough of, was a late show band congealed enough so you could like go with those guys too, or do you have to if you start a band, you have to start from scratch? Or
the guitarist next to me in the late show, his name was Michael. Me and him at one point did start a band about 5-6 years ago. It was all right, but unfortunately the band didn't really work out back then, unfortunately. So me and him, we definitely had a lot of, you know, music, you know, talents.
A lot of common.
Oh yeah, definitely a lot of common. But Don Schaefer, the guy who plays Paul Schaefer in our late show, he was a rapper. He loves to rap. He
makes everybody laugh. And he says jokes, you know, about like Mountain Dew, Baja Blast, because we love Mountain Dew. Yeah. And he
wrote a rap about it.
About soda.
It's okay. I love Mountain Dew too. It keeps me awake. And so, David, I got to ask you though. You're a theater major, Okay, now that usually involves acting, but I'm sure you noticed, and I'm going to ask you if you have a preference, because what you're doing on the late show and on the summer show is not acting. You're basically, you're performing as yourself, Have you no? Yeah. Do you have a preference?
Well, good question. When I'm older, I would like to be an actor to be in movies, and I know I'm very good at convincing to be one when it comes to a character. But as well, for a side note job, I would also like to be a talk show host too, kind of like what James Gordon did, both at the same time, because I know I'm very good at that.
Have you thought of a radio? Because, I mean, most of the talk show jobs in America are on radio, not television. You know, have you thought of that? Yeah.
I think so, here and there, yeah.
Radio is still a very viable medium, you know? Absolutely. Do you guys do a podcast? I mean, an audio podcast? Do you do that?
Sure.
So you actually have one? I mean, that's what I mean. Audio podcast?
No, we haven't had that.
You ever think of doing that?
Someday.
That could be interesting, you know? Takes a lot less equipment than doing video, you know?
True.
Okay, so... All right, so guys, so I want you to send me or have your father or PR, your mother PR person, send me a link to your YouTube videos. I'm going to put it up on our show blog, okay? I don't think I actually have that.
Oh, so, yeah, we have that.
I'll put up some of these pictures too. So I really appreciate you guys joining us. This has been a lot of fun. And best of luck to you. And seriously, do not quit. I mean, it's I'll tell you. No, don't quit. And especially because you actually have an audience. I mean, shit. Do you know how hard it is? Say, I'm going to ask you one more thing, too, before we go.
Sure.
Have you noticed, now, I've done a lot of performing in my life here, and I'm really, really fucking old. So the thing there's a general rule that you need at least 50 people to have an audience. And after that, you have, quote unquote, a gallery. And the mob psychology kind of changes. Have you guys noticed that?
Yeah, I mean, in our show, we've got over 50 people in the audience, so it does. Yeah, I've seen it.
Because that's what I know. I mean, you guys, you do. Your audiences are bigger than 50 people, and so it's like, you have a real audience, and that's not easy. I mean, I've done shows where a lot less people have showed up, so it's like, mm-hmm. you got to take advantage of that. You don't need me to tell you this, But anyway, anyway, guys, I want to thank you. Thanks for joining us. And we'll put your stuff up on our show blog. And I hope you come on again. And I'm going to tell you this straight out right here on the air. If you have anything you ever want to announce, let me know. Okay.
Will do.
Your mother still talks to me. I don't know why, but she does. So anyway, good luck to you. It's been a pleasure. Take care. We'll see you.
Thank you.
Our thanks to David and Robbie King for joining us from Palo Alto. That was, they got kind of a cool thing going there. They're good guys. So if you want to call in, jimandnight.com/call. If you want to leave me a voicemail or text, 408-458-5088. I got a couple things here before we close up. And this is stupid, but... I'm going to kind of end a couple minutes early tonight because I have to go grocery shopping. And it's 11:10 here right now, or 11 o'clock. It's 11 o'clock exactly. And the grocery store closes at midnight. So usually go to 11:30, maybe a couple minutes late. Okay, so what I got here for part three, I got two things I want to run by you. That's kind of interesting. I'm going to read this. This is out of mysteriousuniverse.org. Melvin Vopson, an associate professor in physics from the University of Portsmouth in England, claims a new study that the physical behavior of information in our universe resembles the process of a computer deleting or compressing code. And this implies to him that we are living in a computer simulation whose owner is running out of data space. And we are heading for an information catastrophe. Okay, so this touches on a whole bunch of things. First of all, there's something now called information physics. And information physics is based on the precept that the entire universe is actually created out of information. Not that, well, that atoms and subatomic particles and the physical manifestation of the universe those things actually are created from information itself. In other words, information is a basic building block of the universe. That's when that's this theory. There's also the theory that we are living in a computer simulation. Now, I don't know how they figure this out, but the physicists have apparently said that there's a 1 in 5 chance that our entire universe is existing in someone else's computer, or like a computer game or whatever, you know. And I don't know how they figure that 20% thing out. I really don't know. And then on top of that, you're dealing with the fact that, hold on. You're heading for an information catastrophe because supposedly the universe, the computer we're in, is running out of space to save the data. I don't know how Vopson actually figured that out either. I don't really know. But still, now, you know, this gets to the Matrix crap, you know, and it's not... I've talked about this before. Even if our universe is a simulation, you still have to live your life. Just because your body is and mind is fake, that doesn't mean you can abandon it. You don't. We still have to play the thing out, folks. You know, it's like if some guy, some 14-year-old kid in his mom's basement came up with this whole thing, you know, in a civilization that's 10 million years ahead of ours. And you know, and he set this whole thing up and running. Well, we still have to run our course, man. We do. You can't give up. You can't. And God knows, don't kill yourself either. I'm getting off the news tonight. I hate to bring this up, but suicide is a mortal sin, and it's a sin because you are not living out what you're supposed to live out. And I understand that some people, you know, have horrific lives. I understand this, you know. People are being tortured, you know. It's like, you know, and maybe it's easy for me to say because I'm sitting in a comfy little studio here in Minneapolis. Maybe, I don't know, you know. But still, you know, do your best. That's all I can say, you know. I was talking about what was going on earlier, too, you know, about the fact that once again, master of the obvious stuff. There's so much hate on the planet. There's so much hate in the world, you know. Here's the deal. You don't have to embrace everything. You don't. But it's important that you hate as few things as possible. That's a better way for me to put it. You don't have to love everything. You don't. But try to not to hate most things. I don't understand. You know, this thing that's going on in the Middle East, this has been going on for thousands of years. And I swear to God, these people now, they've forgotten why they hate the other party. I think it's way past that. Hamas doesn't know why it hates Israel. Oh, they'll tell you, oh, it's because we hate the Jews. Well, why do you hate the Jews? Well, they don't know. And Iran doesn't know why they hate the Jews either. It's so long since these conflicts have started, you know, maybe even thousands of years, and certainly tens, if not hundreds of generations of these people hating each other. They've forgotten why they hate. They don't even know. They don't even know why they hate each other, you know. So, how did I get on that? What the hell am I talking about? The universe is a strange but wonderful place. That's all I'll tell you. You know something? I think I'm going to end it with this. I was planning on going on a couple more things here, but like I said, I gotta go grocery shopping. And it's probably a good place to end. So here's the deal. Try to love your family as much as you can. And don't try not to hate people or things as much as you can. You know, live your life. Try to be a positive influence to the people. No. There's only 15 people in the last 500 years that have changed the world. You know, you're probably not going to be one of those people. But you can change your life and you can change the life of people around you in small ways. And usually positive works. So I'm going to leave it with that tonight. A little short show. I can go grocery shopping. Tomorrow night, Martha Zoller's joining us from WDUN in Atlanta. Talkers Magazine's Woman of the Year, Woman Broadcaster of the Year. She's a wonderful woman. I had a chance to lengthily talk with her. I was at the Talkers Convention in June. And And she had a chance to meet her, and we basically hung out for a while, and that was kind of cool. And I'm looking forward to talking to her. So she's on tomorrow night. I'm taking Thursday off. We'll be back on Monday. No, we'll be back tomorrow night, and then we'll be back on Monday. So I want to thank the King Brothers again for joining us. I'm Jim Peters. Thanks for watching, everybody. Good night, Esperanza. Good night, Uncle Donnie. And good night to you, wherever you are. Here's the end card.